Gerard, if you're talking, your mic must be muted.
How about that? Is that better?
That's much better. I was beginning to think I wasn't hearing things.
I'm sorry. Well, I'll start over.
Yeah, better start from the beginning.
Yeah, okay. Well, good evening, everybody. It's nice to be here Monday night, 4-8, April 8th, 2019. John is not here tonight. He couldn't be here, and I didn't prepare any kind of Bible reading, and I think we'll start off with question and answer after we get done with any kind of announcements or questions that Jan might have in his hand at this time. So, moving right along.
Well, I was going to tell John they're ganging up on him. I must have a dozen questions tonight.
Yeah, see, he knew that. That's why he
I think so. That's why he ducked out.
Well, that's all right. Yeah. Let me see what we could do. And
okay.
I told him I would give him plenty to talk about next week if I didn't answer something right.
Yep, so. Exactly. This first
anyway,
one.
Anyway, you got it.
First one, you kind of have to know. I don't know. Do you know Alex Newman, who he is?
Alex Newman. No, I don't think so.
Well, anyway, he's an international journalist, educator, author, foreign correspondent for the New America, all these things. They would like some comments on his presentation, but since we don't know him, it's kind of difficult to come up with a comment on his presentation. So moving rapidly along, why don't we go to question number two? Which is, don't you think that if we focused strongly on organizing militias nationwide, that committees of safety would form almost naturally as a result?
If we focus strongly on forming militias?
Yes, on organizing, well, organizing militias nationwide.
Well, first of all, in order for us to form militias nationwide, that would be tough. Really, the states are supposed to provide for that. And I think the only thing that we at NLA could do would be to push their hand to do that. If we spearhead forming militias, they'll just say that we're a terrorist organization. That's what I can see. I think you have to be careful with that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't form militias, and there are militias out there that already are formed. And those militias should work on making sure they know, you know, get friendly with the sheriff and facilitate, you know, whatever it takes to have them ready to go working with the sheriff, because it's the people. So, you know, committees of safety, I don't know that you have to have them before you have the militias, or what happens, the chicken or the egg here with the committee of safety, you know. It's almost easier to make a committee of safety before you make a militia, I think. I mean, everybody, look, we're all militia anyway. I mean, you should be preparing, you should own a gun, you should be doing these things anyway. So I think that the part that really would organize it would be the committee of safety. You know, I don't know how you go, you know, to start a militia. I mean, I know you could do it. And you could organize a local one. Obviously, you know, we have the 3%ers and all these guys that are already organized, and so you know, I know that they have methodologies of doing that, and we should really be looking into, you know, how that happens. And but like John has said in the past, there are provisions for the state to fund the militia, and that's not happening now. So I think the best we could do is go on a bandwagon to get them to do that, to say, look, this nation was formed, you know, we are a militia state. That's how we got here. So, you know, the state needs to fund that in order to perpetuate the state, because if anything happens, you know, especially domestically, it's supposed to be the militia, and we're woefully unprepared for anything, God forbid, happens now. It's going to be real hard, because you're going to have to start from scratch. So I don't know if, you know, what's a good answer for that, except for let's do what's in the Constitution, and let's push that forward. You know, as far as each person, you should already be a militia. You already are a militiaman. You know, if you're between the ages of 15 and 45, I think what it is, you know, you should own a gun, and you should be ready to defend your nation. You know, any more than that, as far as drilling and things like that, local people could get together and do that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But in the same token, the state should be funding us to some extent to get those things going. So that's the best answer I have. I don't know, you know, if John has anything different, or actually Brent might be able to answer that, because Brent, you know, wrote extensively on the militia clauses. So I would ask Brent, you know, if he has any ideas as far as, you know, what's going to make committees of safety form quicker, because I really don't know, you know, like I said, the chicken or the egg.
Okay? Yeah, I know in the past we had armories, and they had arms in them for the militia. And all that stuff went away, you know, just disappeared. And I think if you check, you will find, although I know even like in Pennsylvania, there is a militia. There are 3 percenters, and I don't know what other groups there are. And the thing is, if they don't know you and they don't trust you, you're going to have fun trying to find them. So, you know, it's difficult to try and determine how many are out there right now. There could be one per state. There could be more than one per state. I have no clue and no easy way to find out. Okay, next question.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Next question. Has anybody out there in the state of Pennsylvania, and this is probably a good one for Robert O, if he's on now, he said he was going to be here. Anybody in the state of Pennsylvania successfully procured a land patent? If so, how does one go about obtaining one?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that we've had some people that have land patents. And like you said, Robert O would know more about that. He's been working on that. I don't think it's too hard to get a land patent, you know. I mean, there's certain, depending on where you are, they're done differently and like in the east than they are in the west, depending on whether it was a territory or you know, when the state was formed. And there are people that have them, but, you know, you have to enforce them. You know, once you have them, you know, they have to recognize them. And I don't know how that's worked out for anybody.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you got a land patent, technically, they shouldn't even be able to tax your land, I don't believe, you know.
Right.
So, I don't know if Robert's on and if he wants to come on and speak.
No, I just looked. I don't see him. He said he was going to be here.
Well, maybe he'll be in later. So we'll come back to that. I don't, you know, I know of a couple people that used to work on getting them, and it's not any much different than you know, doing a title search and going all the way back and figuring out, you know, how, you know, showing the title to the land unencumbered to you, you know, till you picked it up. And there's some little things that you should know, you know, and I know that, you know, the way the banks do things today and the title companies and that they leave the deeds unprotected. They you know, where your name goes in there, if you don't accept the deed and you don't put your name there, basically that line's open and some lawyer can come in and put his name in there. And I think they do that purposely so it makes it easier for them to take over your property. So, you know, there's things that you should know, and probably we should all, once we've discovered those things, we probably should all check our deeds and land patents and make sure that the land is in our name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know enough about, I know enough about it to make me dangerous probably, you know.
Yeah. Okay, next question. If the 1986 Firearms Protection Act made it illegal for the federal government to have a registry, and then McDonald Heller case said that the states also have to abide by the Second Amendment, then why do states such as New York want a registry of AR guns, and how did he get away with this?
Same way they get away with everything, because they don't follow the Constitution.
And nobody challenges it.
And we have representatives that are weak, that don't. That's right. Look at it. The people that we have in our Congress and Senate should be the ones speaking up about this. You know, basically, New York is so bad that they're going to create a civil war right here if they think that they're going to enforce all the stuff that they want to do. They're going to have a problem. Now, I know They don't want to go door to, well, I look at the Democrats, or I shouldn't say the Democrats, but the communists in this country, it's a, who the Democratic Party is identifying with at this point. I mean, I wouldn't even, if I was a Democrat, I wouldn't even admit it today. It's embarrassing. They would love to go to door to door to collect guns, but that's gonna create a civil war if they do it. And the powers that be understand that. So they're putting all these crazy laws in where they can come into your house and take your guns, and anybody can drop a dime on you, and that's the way they want to get them. They want to pull you over on the road and get you on something else and use that as an excuse to come in and get your guns. They want to get in the middle of a family dispute, a divorce, this, that. And so they've been doing this all along with their SAFE Act. And, you know, we even have sheriffs that have said, well, we're not going to enforce it. We're not going to enforce the SAFE Act. They said, but, you know, if we get called into your house and you got an AR laying on the table, then we'll enforce it. Well, that's a weak sheriff that says that. But technically, that's what I know. Some of them have said, we're not going to go, like, door-to-door enforcing it. So, you know, that's like being a little pregnant. You know, you either are or you aren't, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And you know, if you say you're not going to enforce it, then you shouldn't be enforcing it. And if my AR is sitting on the table, you should say, hey, look, I can show you how to fix that pin there, and why don't you hide that until we're out of here? Not we're going to enforce it if we see it. And not, I mean, what's he saying? He's not ready to go to door-to-door yet. You know what I mean? And so that's not good enough for me. You know, and if you got a sheriff that is not standing up to these acts, then he's weak. And, of course, he can't do it alone. The people should be going to him and calling him and telling him that he shouldn't be doing this. Now, as far as the state police go, you know, look, I have a lot of nice troopers. I got them in my family. I got them in my community. I'm friends with a lot of them. But they're not a constitutional police force. I'm sorry. There is no provision. They're no different than any other code enforcement officer, basically. They're a private force for the governor in New York State, for Cuomo. They work for him. They take their orders from him. And the only thing we have going with them, I think they still do, I think they take an oath of office. So if they do, that's the protection we have against them. And I mean, if anybody's going to come door to door, it's going to be an elite group of New York State troopers that the commandant puts in there, because he said he would. He said if Cuomo wants me to get guns, I'll do it. There's one guy we should go after, because basically that's a treasonous statement right there.
Yeah.
You know, these guys come out and say things and they go unchallenged. You know, I mean, people should have ringed his house and kept him up all night long with that statement, you know what I mean? He should have charges pressed on him. And same thing with Cuomo. Cuomo's evil, evil man, you know? And of course, he feels protected down in New York City in his concrete jungle down there with all the crazies he's got around him. But I'll tell you what, he doesn't want to leave the city and come out to the country where the country boys are. He'd be in trouble, you know? So the reason that they're keeping registries and doing the things they're doing is because we let them get away with it. That's why. And we have corrupt judges, especially in New York in the courts. They've been bought and paid for. We know that. Donald Trump has been trying to put new federal judges in the districts down here in the Southern District is what he's concentrating on, because you can't try any of these guys in a New York court, and especially not in the Southern District. It's all bought and paid for. And hence, I think that's why he's talking about military tribunals, because they couldn't get a good trial in New York City or in New York State if they wanted to, because, you know, everything's been so deeply controlled. You know, politics in New York is like joining the mob. You don't get in there until you become a made man through the crimes that you do before they let you in. They document. They hold them over your head. And that's a fact. So I guess that's as good an answer as I could give at any as why do they do it and why, and you know, and you know, even though it's against the federal law and really it should be against the state law, you know. If it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. I don't care if it's on a federal level or a state level. So it's our fault.
That's right. I was looking through the Pennsylvania Constitution recently, and they do things a little differently, of course, being a commonwealth, I guess. Section 21 is the right to bear arms. Says nothing, absolutely nothing, about the militia. It does say the right of the citizens to bear arms. Now get this, in defense of themselves and the state shall not be questioned. It's a little different way of going about it. Well, I thought that was rather interesting. Shall not be questioned, and in defense of themselves. It doesn't mention hunting. It doesn't mention target shooting. It's for your defense, of course. Okay, next question. There's a crisis going on in America in which many families are left homeless on the streets, living with family members and or accepting benefits for housing by the same system that crippled them. There's not many infrastructures fighting against this injustice. I am only familiar with one. When is something going to be done about the non-judicial foreclosures as many people continue to suffer? When does one see the remedy for the crimes committed from organizations and or financial institutions and organizations whom commit these acts after it's been filed on a federal level? That's a plea for, are we going to do more?
Well, yeah, we are, because the next paper that John is filing is against the judiciary who is allowing this to happen. Look, we filed papers, and they don't want to answer them. They want to ignore them. They want to throw you out on Rule 12 and this thing and that thing. Victory so far is that there, even though the judge said the case was dismissed, the clerk is still accepting papers on the docket. So what does that mean? That means we got somebody scared up there into doing the right thing. So, you know, did he really dismiss the case or not? I mean, we've already indicted him for that, I believe. And so it's only a matter of time until that indictment becomes recognized by somebody. That's why we're hoping these new judges that Trump is putting in, that when our stuff gets in front of them, there'll be some different results. Look, you're not going to change the system or anything. It's kind of like, you know, I compare it to the modern cancer cure, which doesn't work. It's because they want to cut the thing out, and they never change the soil that it grew in. And that's what our problem is. It's just that, you know, you can't go in these corrupt courts thinking you're going to get different results. And you know, until we get those people out and bring them to justice, which, you know, the judges have voted themselves immunity. How do they give themselves immunity? That's not in the Constitution. That's something they did for themselves. So, you know, we have to come above all that, and we have to get around all that. And that's only through critical mass, through the people coming up. Look, if you're going to sit back and wait for somebody else, I mean, we're doing it. We need more support. We need more help. We need more money. I mean, we could look at these things that we're filing. We don't have enough money to file them in every single district court in the nation. I forget what it is. I think there's 94 or something.
Right.
But each one of those cost us to do. Look, if we had the money to do it, if everybody was given $5 a month, we would have no trouble filing them. It holds a whole lot more weight if we could do that in every district court, because we would get the attention of these congressmen, senators, and maybe the president, and maybe when he gets the Department of Justice straightened out, you know. Look, it will be first in line if we're up there being noisy enough, and they see us in every state, and we need to present a plan. John is making a plan. That's the next paper he's writing, something that we can present up there to Donald Trump as far as how the common law grand juries will work and how we will implement them, because, look, at once we have success, that's the beginning of the work. You know, who are you going to let out of jail? I mean, you're opening a whole bag of stuff here, because 98% of the people didn't have due process. So we need to come up with a plan of how to implement this as we go forward. And look, at if we can do it with common law grand juries and petit juries, that will work it out, because that's a bunch of us sitting around coming up with solutions, and that's the way it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be prosecutors and lawyers. It's supposed to be common law and common sense and natural law, and that's the easiest way to fix problems when people come together and you do it with honor, justice, and mercy. Look, give me problems and I'll give you solutions. If we can sit down and talk about things and really talk about them, and we have the authority to either nullify or do what we're supposed to do to fix the problem, we can fix all the problems. There's no problems out there that we can run into that we can't fix. And it's not that complicated, really. I mean, the biggest ones you want to be careful of are those that actually have violent, you know, crimes. Those are the ones that you're going to leave there and leave them in jail and then go through their cases one at a time. But most of the other statutory stuff, that's simple. You know, they didn't belong there in the first place. And you just let them out. You know, you commute them. And I can see that, you know, everybody's afraid of not having these statutes because they don't think that we can live without them. They don't think that... They think that if there's no speed limit on our roads, everybody's going to be doing 100 miles an hour. That's not true. That's not true at all. I mean, look, at the speed limit isn't what protects you. You know, if you're out there doing something that's putting people in danger, I mean, look, you can get a ticket for speeding without having a radar. They call it speed imprudent. You know, if there's snow and ice on the road and you shouldn't and you can't drive more than 20 miles an hour, but you run down the road and you're doing 60 or 50 or 40, that you're speeding because you're driving faster than the conditions will bear. And if you know under common law, if you had an accident or you hurt somebody, there's an injured party, you're done. You know, actually, the penalties under common law are much more severe than this statutory stuff. Look at this statutory stuff is one of the things that you can buy your way out of. It's just a matter there's everything has a price tag, and if you meet the price, they let you go. You know, but that's not under common law, and you can't. I mean, think about it. You can't, if you commit murder. You can't put a price on murder. They said all federal crimes have been reduced to commercial crimes now. They're all commercial crimes, all federal crimes. That's the latest thing out, which means that you pay your way out. If you got money, you get out of it, basically. So we know that can't happen. We know that it can't happen under common law or natural law, because you can't buy your way out of these crimes against humanity. Anyway, that's my answer to that.
Okay, there's kind of an adjunct on that. After years of patience and my paperwork being filed, the courts and the sheriff's office can't seem to find him. From what I was told, it was closed, yet it still can't be found. After years of help, I was told someone would give me a call and help me on a local level. No one has done that as of yet. I'm frustrated, and I hope you understand. I've been sleeping in my car going on 3 years now.
So, I know who that is.
Yes, so do I.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard for us. How come I'm bleeding back from somebody? I hear myself in my ears. What we're working on now is pushing those cases through. Not, you know, if they can't find your case, that means somebody removed it. That's a different thing than what we're working on. I mean, they're not supposed to lose cases, obviously. They're not supposed to remove things from the court. Those are actually separate charges and separate cases. And I know that you've been talking to, I think, Jim on as far as your paperwork goes. Those cases are what we're basically pushing through with our with this latest case that we're going to do against the judiciary, because they violated your due process, and we're working through that. And as soon as things start changing on the top and they push it through the bottom, those cases will be. I know it's years of patience. I mean, we got horror stories all throughout NLA. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how many people have been wrongfully. I mean, we've had people even murdered, lost their lives due to them getting violated in their due process rights and things. So I don't know what to say, you know, how to remedy you yourself or who could help you with that. We don't really have an answer as far as making the courts do what they refuse to do until somebody comes in and starts cleaning it up. I mean, these are cases that, you know, we need to do with the common law grand jury. And I think we're very close to having them established, because we're going to, this latest thing we're doing, we're going to end up sending it up to Donald Trump and the Justice Department. And I think that's the last step we'll be going through in order to getting this thing implemented and getting them to recognize us. Look, we're not asking them anything. Basically, this case that we went in, it's not a court case. But basically, what we're saying is, we the people have ruled, and this is what you need to do. The court case is done. There's no court case. The grand jury has put them on notice that you're violating the due process and the Constitution, and there's nothing for you to do but fix it. We're not waiting for them. We're not asking an opinion from them. Basically, we gave them the prescription in our paperwork. You know, I mean, when we filed that Corwanto, basically that's what it said. You know, it's an indictment from the people, and they really do have to answer it. They only have a limited time to answer it, and of course they haven't. But the minute that, you know, one court gets straightened out, we get recognized, and they put us in there, they assemble a common law grand jury, and we're getting very close in certain places. You know, we have some people working very closely with their sheriffs, and you know, we need. I'd like to see two or three counties doing it, because it's, you know, one county out in the middle in the middle of a bunch of corruption is going to be very hard for them to carry forward with their common law grand jury if they're alone. You know, you need this. This requires a force of people, and it would be nice to get, you know, a bunch of county sheriffs in on this thing. But even if we got to do it with just, you know, the one, if we can get the backing of the federal government, you know, to our paperwork and upholding the rule of law and correcting the lower courts, then it'll happen. And I think, as a patient as you have been, and it's two or three years and you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, I think it's right around the corner. I think it's coming very shortly. And I know you've been hearing this and been hearing it, but what I see going on in the nation right now, and the people that are going to go down here for the things that they did, that's the beginning of it. And once the cabal, these evil people that we have for years and years in our Congress and our Senate and all the way down through the system, when they start seeing their compadres fall and get convicted, I think that's when you're going to see them become scared of the common law grand jury that's coming to town, because it is coming, and we are close. And the next paper that we file is going to be pretty exciting, because I think it's coming at exactly the right time for what's going on in the nation, and I think we're going to give them the solution of how to do it. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't remember or don't know how the juries and the grand juries should operate. You know, right now, everything's puppet, because the judges and the prosecutors lead them around and actually commit treason with the instructions that they give them. Look, we have to reinstate nullification. We have to nullify. Juries have to nullify. People, when you're on a jury, you can't be afraid to nullify. You know, I don't care what they tell you. So, you know, we got to make this a movement, and it has to be across the nation. It has to be in multiple places at the same time, and that's what we're pushing for. And I think that some of the things that are going down right now, I mean, you're seeing stuff on the top where they went after Donald Trump, and they got FISA, where they use the federal government and the CIA and the FBI use powers that some of them that are very barely constitutional and only for national security, and they use them against we the people. And when Obama was in there, he had that program put in where they spied on everybody and violated all our Fourth Amendment rights. So these things are going to be answered now. And if you don't think that that's going to help your case, then you're not seeing the big picture here, because it will. Because once that stuff actually starts happening and those people start going down, that's when they're going to look around. They're going to realize everybody is going to wake up to the fact that we've been denied due process for many, many years. And how do you put the due process back in? You reinstitute the free juries and grand juries, and you let them do their work. And under common law, you know, you're not working for statutes. Under common law, that jury and that grand jury can write prescriptions. It doesn't necessarily even have to go to trial at that point. So that's how we're going to do it. I mean, you know, once we can get charges on these people, one of the things that the grand juries will do is make sure that they do restitution and say, look it, we're going to indict you on this stuff because you got kicked out of your house. I mean, I don't know how you put a dollar amount on what you've been through, living in your car for 3 years. I mean, what kind of damages is that? My goodness, it's like, that's a big number if they have to compensate you. But the least they could do is restore you either into your house or into a new house, you know, with some punitive damages for you to live off of. And I'm hoping that we see that day. Look, they got all the money. They stole all the money. The money's out there, you know. We just have to redistribute it into the right places. That's all. So, I mean, I don't want to go on and on, but basically you get the idea that we haven't given the fight up. We're still fighting the fight. And it's always, you know, when it looks darkest just before the light. I mean, right now, we've discovered a lot of stuff that we didn't know 3 years ago. We're really pushing hard as far as, you know, where the law is and why it's not working. And the latest memorandums that are filed. I mean, look at John's work on Title 18, where they're sticking all the criminal code. It's not valid. It's not valid at all. And most people have never heard this. That's where we should be pushing our paperwork around. And I've talked to a couple people, Terry and Jim and that, and What we need to do is we need to start getting these things out on videos. And we need to start spreading this word so that it goes viral throughout, you know. And look, anybody that's on any kind of a social media or on another site where you're listening to other patriots, you should be pushing NLA stuff across their desk. You should be getting them interested in order to have us on and interview us so that we can give them the plan. That's the last thing we're doing here. We're writing the plan to implement the common law grand jury, because the only way we're going to get justice is by implementing our plan, which is the reinstatement of justice through the juries and the grand juries, through the juries of your peers, and getting rid of the statutory baloney that's got everybody locked down. So this next phase, which I think it's going to start moving quickly, because once you put the first crack in, it's like the dam that breaks. Once that first hole comes in, you're going to see big chunks falling out, and we need to be ready to fill those holes, because that's going to be a vacuum. And if we're not ready, then what's going to happen is we're going to just, you know, we'll get better for a time, but those people that are nefarious will go back into the same place, and we'll end up being back in the same position we are right now if we don't educate ourselves and educate other people on how to do this and how to do it right. And that's what taking these courses is all about up on NLA, and making sure that you understand and can articulate the rule of law and the Constitution and what our heritage is and where it's from, you know, where we've been and where we're from and where we should be. So I think that you're going to see in this next group of paperwork that we do, and we want to do a big push. I know I'm going on long here, but we want to do a big push on getting this stuff out on other media. Look, we have the opportunity today to reach many, many people that we never had before. We can do videos and we can push them out there and have our stuff go out to people all over the United States and all over the world. And there's no reason we can't do that anymore. I mean, you can, Terry's got a Zoom room. We can interview, we can have 9 people on there and we can take talks that we do, like even these calls, any good section that we get, we're going to be able to pull that out, edit it and put like a 10-minute video up from NLA and throw it out there and then let people use it on their sites. We'll let everybody use it. Look at that. All of our stuff is usable. So we're going to start doing that. We're going to start making videos, narratives, and editing them and throwing them out and try to keep them short and sweet. But that's how the plan's going to get implemented. That's how your case is going to be solved or rectified by people doing the right thing and reinstituting the rule of law. And you don't have a prayer or a chance until that happens. Until we get some really constitutional common law, natural law back into the courts. And it only has to start in one corner, and because it's like turning the light on, the darkness won't seize it once it's turned on. You know, and that's what we're about. We're going to light that candle. We're going to light that light, and it's going to chase the darkness out. And I think we're pretty close. I think everybody needs to get on the stick and help, because, you know, in any way that you can, whether it be financially or helping us do videos and ideas for videos and editing and. We got a lot of things for a lot of people to do, and we need to be the most active than we've ever been right now, because we're at a very transition point in the nation and in the world. This is worldwide. The whole world is groaning over this stuff. It's not just us. It's not just you. It's not just me. It's the whole world. It's a world thing. The world has gotten a lot smaller because we can all communicate now. We talk. We have people from England and Ireland and all over that come to these meetings and go on to these seminars and weekly things, like on Patriot Soapbox. There's people from all over the world that participate. And there's no reason that we shouldn't be doing it as a group. You know, we technically have a presence in every state, and we need to activate that presence, and we need to multiply it. And I think the best way is through the technology we have now of producing videos, nice videos. I mean, I don't want my ugly mug up there when I'm talking, but Ollie did a very nice rendering of the interview we had with We Are Free TV, and they put pictures that flashed across the screen as we were being interviewed that were pertinent to the subject matter, and it made it very, very powerful, I think. And we need to do that 100 times over again and on all these different subjects. So that's the new thing that we're calling out here. I don't know if you got any more questions, Jan. I've been going on for a long time, but what I want to make is the plea that everybody get activated on the stuff that we're going to implement. Look for, we'll be letting you know where to go. We're going to be having committees and things, but we're going to focus on getting the word out through interviews and videos and activating all these other groups and bringing them together through NLA, getting our stuff onto their sites. So I'm going to stop and see if there's any more questions there. I went on way too long, but that's basically the process. We're helping everybody together. Now, I don't know as far as somebody getting a hold of you to do your case. I mean, if they can't find your stuff in the court, that's something that needs to be filed over there under the breaking of the law, removing stuff from the court. I don't know how they can say we can't find it. You know, that's the same crap that you're getting up in Congress when they're supposed to release something and they don't, or it's just not there. I mean, that's a lie. They got it. They don't throw stuff away because they're information hot. They're the ones collecting all the information. You know they have it. You know it's a lie if they're telling you you can't find it. And so I don't know, what the procedure is. Tom Fitton seems to have a good luck with doing his Freedom of Information Act, but I think that's only because everybody knows who he is, and he doesn't work in the dark. He works with a lot of publicity. That's what we need to do.
Okay. Next question. Is the county sheriff the top law enforcement officer in the county? If so, is there a law or case law to prove that fact?
Well, that's what our whole sheriff's book is about. And it's for sheriffs, empowering them, showing them where in the law and in tradition the sheriff was. We know that the sheriff is the top dog, and we know that he's empowered. The case in 1998, I think, with Sheriff Mack, where they wanted him to do stuff with the Brady Bill, and he refused, and he took them to the Supreme Court, and he won the case. There's no question that the sheriff is the top dog. The trouble is you got all these state agencies and these governors and stuff usurping the law and treating the sheriff like he's just a paper boy for the courts. You know, it's up to the sheriffs to put their foot down. The two most powerful people in the county, because they can assemble a common law grand jury, is the sheriff and the coroner. How many people know that? That your coroner is as powerful as the sheriff is as far as assembling a common law grand jury. Especially if he thinks there's been a murder. So I don't know what you want me to answer there. I would say go on our pages and read our sheriff's booklet. Sheriff's handbook. It's all in there. And it comes right from Magna Carta to present. And there's court cases won, and there's lots of good quotes from court cases right on down.
Okay, next.
Sorry. Yep.
Next question. I have a 1983 case that has been in the court for over 6 years. I am proceeding pro se. I'm looking for a lawyer for assistance, not representation. Would you have any suggestions? Also, should it be assumed this is an Article 3 court? Doesn't say what court he's in.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know that we even know that there's been an Article 3 court since the 40s, right?
I think we know there hasn't been, don't we?
Right. We know. Yeah, that's right. We know that there hasn't been. They're not assembling them, and they're not. You look at, first of all, when you open the case up, you got to open up an Article 3 court by the things that you say. Now, we open ours all the same way, and they're not recognizing it. The federal cases, they have you filling out a civil cover sheet, so maybe they feel like they're covered by that because you paid them the $300 or whatever it is, and you filled out their civil cover sheet, even though we cross off when they say the type of case, we fill in our own under common law, an action under common law. And, they if they have any objections to that, they're supposed to stay in the beginning as the case starts, you know, and they never do. They never follow their own procedures. So what are you going to do about that? That's why we're suing the judiciary, because they're just simply lawless. I mean, you don't have an Article III court. I mean, you're supposed to use those words, and you're supposed to say in this court of record. And there, you look at the kind of the preamble to the cases that we start, and we always lay it out in the beginning, and they always ignore it, and they try to pick on something that they would rather talk about than what we talked about, such as you know a lawyer or you know it's a frivolous action or something like that, you know. And that's why we are where we are with our cases, and that's why we're filing what we're filing, because we see how we understand how they're operating.
Okay, now the last question that I have is for Brent, and I don't see Brent on the call yet, so I guess we'll have to wait for that. Ma'am, you can start with a cue. I have any more questions other than that one.
You don't have any more questions. Well, it's going to be a quick night if Brent's not here.
I don't see him yet. He usually checks in 10:15, 10:30, though, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's been coming in later, yeah. Well, I will. I'll start with the queue. We got a few people in there, and we can keep going. What is it? It's almost 10 o'clock here. So it's still early. Okay. I'm going to open up the first questioner, and it says, is that Robert? Let me see. Yeah, Robert. I don't know which Robert, so I'm going to open it up. Go ahead, Robert. You got the mic.
Hello. Can you hear me?
There you go. There. That's. I know what Robert it is now. How you doing?
Yeah. Hi, Gerard. Fine. Some of this stuff I've been working along. Land patent, well, when you get a notice from supposedly a city, but then you question what jurisdiction, and you get a tax notice, the person that died isn't even cold in the ground yet, and they want to open up and reevaluate the tax of the property. And that really got my goat. And that was in 2007. So since that time, I have kind of been building a case. I'm to the point now, somebody asked about land patents. Yes, they do work. Yes, they are still active. And yes, they are lawful. And if they weren't, then the federal government would have nothing but parks, national parks in the lower 48. So the first thing to do is get your proper description. And we're fortunate in my county, the register has gone back to and into the time when we've got the swamp property of Michigan from the federal government. That was the nickname for Michigan when land came down the swamp. So I kind of feel like we have a little extra special tie to what's going on today with Trump draining the swamp. So anyhow, besides the point, the first thing then is to get it on record. To record it, I always start with a affidavit of preceding events to the point, and then interject a land patent update. There are several out there. I use one that I kind of halfway designed myself, and then get it in, get it registered, and request them to put it on your parcel records. Well, that comes out of the commissioners, and then also the Environmental Agency of Land or whatever the heck they call it now. They try to water it down with so many bureaucratic overpaid people that you wonder where to turn. But anyhow, they probably won't do it. I had to do 3 affidavits and force them basically to record it. Once you get that done, in my case, if you open up my parcel records, you're going to find land patent 3 different times. And I figured it was important enough to force them to the point. Number one, it refers to the common reference to the property and house at 451 Hubbard Street in my town, city. And once you get that done, then you can start hanging things on the sheriff. Now, I'll openly say that the sheriff of Van Buren County, Michigan, is not a duly lawful sheriff. I've asked him 3 different times for certified, not copied, certified, oath of office, wet ink signature, 3 times in the last 6 months, and have not heard a word. I'm going to proceed to the next end of this thing, and it's going to get into the 1812 and the 1871, where our illustrious government decided to give away everything we own and all of our rights under the Constitution. So I'm going to bring it forward on that end. I'm keeping everything into strictly Article 3, court, and I'm not coming out of the Constitution. I'm going to start with the Dead Sea Scrolls, go through Roman law, come back into the Magna Carta, go into the Declaration of Independence, go into the Articles of Confederation, go into the Constitution, then go into the Bill of Rights. I'm all done monkeying with these characters. They think they're real cute. It's time that the people get off their dead rear ends and start making a lot of noise. Once we start that, and with what you guys, and I'm a member of the NLA, and once you guys on the top start pushing the top in the government, yeah, things are going to happen. I don't think it's going to, I'm like you, Gerard. I'll give her 1 month at the most, and I think things are going to pop. I know with some of the people I'm working with in law, they're ready to go. So I'm going to leave it at that. So I hope I answered the question on land patents.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I remember you going through the process where you forced them to register your land patent. Right. And I don't remember the exact thing that did that. You did it with 3 affidavits by filing 3 affidavits into the county clerk to be
right.
So
yeah,
they put
the register.
What's that?
Mainly the register.
Right, the registrar of properties. So what you did is you went in to file an affidavit on your deed? Is that how you did it?
No. I leave the deed out of it. I keep it strictly into law, common law. Once you start recording it as a deed, you've lost your value of common law. Uh-huh. You got to keep it out of there. One of the other things, once I did that, and then I got looking at the phrase real property. Well, back here about 3 years ago, our grand legislators of the United States started monkeying around with the term real property on common law and land patent update. I simply wrote an article transferring my property from real property to allodium private property. Now, that cut them off at the pass. They didn't want to put it on there, but I brought up another affidavit and rammed it right to them, and they didn't have any choice but to record it. So now I'm into the third step of affidavit, and I just started on it today. I did so far about 8 hours research today on this thing, and this is just a draft, but it's going to start out, notice that common law by affiant Robert Overhill of treason by the United States government, officials of the year of our Lord, 1871, the officers and sitting elected officials of Congress, President, Supreme Court, without law of American jurisprudence, and the United States Constitution for the United States of America, 1787-89, without Congress in session. And then I'm going to go on from there. And that is my title. So,
when you bring this to the registrar, what do you tell her? You tell her that you want to record this affidavit?
Yes.
That's it. And she has to take
it.
But she has no...
Well,
when you want to record an affidavit, that's her job, right?
Right. Yes. And the register, if you get researching back into the register and what they can do, they can work both in common law and admiralty statute.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite a discussion with our register of Van Buren County. He does understand. And I told him, I says, by the grace of God, you got lucky. And he says, what do you mean? I says, can't get you into court.
Right.
He's doing his job.
And people got to know that when you go there, you got to say record, not file, because filing is something different, right?
Correct. Stay away from I do not use the parcel record identification. I use the legal survey.
The description,
by the federal government. Yes. The legal survey description. And I usually will go in as far. You can do it. It takes a little effort, but you can go in as far and pick up the original survey sketches. Every square inch of the lower 48's got one. You just have to do quite a bit of research, but you can get it. I've got all mine on this piece I'm on. Originally started out at 19 and a half acres. And the old boy that had the property was out in your state, New York.
Uh-huh.
And then he sold it to another guy that was in the area first, and that was old J.R. Monroe. And I forget where he came out of. I want to say New York, but I can't remember for sure. But anyhow, a lot of property in Michigan was brought out first by New Yorkers, Pennsylvanians, a few out further on the original East Coast Commonwealths, not too many, but in that New York, Pennsylvania, I think there was some Delaware folks out here, stuff like that. And the reason being, when we came in, we didn't have the populace to be brought in under population on the Constitution. No, we had the good old corporate United States of America, right? Our state constitution. Jumped the gun a little bit because they got a little scared that we might have enough population, that way they couldn't control us. And that was in, I think the first shot at Michigan to be a state was 1833 or 34. And then that was dropped down. We finally got in 1837 after the feds put us in under on legislation. So that's kind of the history. I have a lot of fun monkeying around with that a little bit, especially calling my elected officials downtown my public servants, and then try pinning their ears back a little bit. It's a lot of fun. People ought to try it. Don't be afraid of them.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Robert. We appreciate that. That was pretty good.
Enjoy coffee. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll go to Crystal from Connecticut, our favorite. Crystal, go ahead, Crystal. You've been unmuted, unshackled, and set free. Did she get, she didn't get unmuted, or she did she? Yes, she did. Crystal, can you hear me? I don't hear anything. Does anybody hear me? I am still.
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. I think Crystal might have dozed off. Give her a shout. Shout a couple times.
Crystal, hello. I wish I had a little horn I could push. Beep.
Yeah, little air horn.
It's a little. Well, she went to. She took a nap early. She usually makes it later than this.
Maybe you mute her and unmute her a few times. That makes a noise.
Yeah, let's try that. Let's see, where is she? We'll do it over here, right? I guess you're doing it with me because it's like doing
yep.
It. You're doing it. Okay, I'll leave my fat finger off it then.
Okay.
Because we'll be canceling each other out. Crystal, pick up your mic. Let's go. No, maybe she can.
Well, maybe we'll have to come back later.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'll go to the next one. You know what? I'm going to try this here. We got New York Michael. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. In relation to the land patents, I checked on the websites and I got the information for the West Coast from like what Robert was using and so forth. I applied for a land patent on my property here in New York as I just had it paid for in October. And I sent them the survey description of my property. And I got a response from them. I sent it to Washington, D.C., the Bureau of Land Management. And they responded to me and said they don't hold any patents here for New York for me to contact Albany. They gave me the address, so I contacted them. I called them, and I sent them a bunch of information. And I got a response from them, and they said they don't hold any land patents for New York, believe it or not. And it says here, I just got this in the mail. It said, we received your recent inquiry for a land patent for Springville, New York. Staff has searched the location indexes, but have been unable to yield any results. Land west of the Seneca Lake was originally owned by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The original records of such grants are in Massachusetts Archives, Office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth, 220 Morrissey, Morrissey Boulevard, Boston, Massachusetts, 02125. And they have a website for them. So according to what they're telling me, is that they don't have any availability to get me a land patent through Albany. And then it said here, the lands lying west of the 82nd milestone of the New York-Pennsylvania border, roughly the meridian of Seneca Lake, those lands were determined by the Treaty of Hartford in 1786 to be the property of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts under its colonial charter, and therefore title to those lands derives from Massachusetts, not New York. The Hartford Treaty confirmed New York's political sovereignty over the lands in dispute. For copies of any grants by Massachusetts, we suggest you contact the Bureau of State Archives in Massachusetts. So I'm in the process of trying to do a land patent here in New York before. I haven't filed any deed on my property as of yet. However, I did receive a property tax bill for the county of Erie with nothing filed, and I paid them. I don't want to get in trouble and lose my property after going through 17 years of making payments on it to buy it. So I'm still, you know, working at the land patent here in New York. So that fellow from Pennsylvania, he may have to go to Massachusetts also for their land patent division. But that's what I wanted to comment on.
Right. And I knew a guy that was doing them here locally by me, which, you know, I'm like 30 miles south of Albany, New York, and they actually have good records over here for that, that go all the way back.
Right. So. Well, I have records back to 1836 when the first owner of this property was listed on the title search. But they said there was no conversion of a land patent to that fella. So what happened to it from the time there was a land patent until when he bought it, I have no idea, unless he never even pursued it or even cared about it.
I think that's what you're going to find. I think that he should have done it, and he didn't bother because he didn't think he needed to, maybe.
Exactly.
You know? And so that makes it tough if you want the true land patent. You have to go
right all
the way back to the original owner, right?
Right. They said on the phone that if I had a copy of the original land patent, they could, you know, I could transfer it over to me. But until that time comes where I can get a copy of the original, there's no way that I could do anything with my property for a land patent. So it's kind of between a rock and a hard place here. I'm trying to figure out what to do. I'll contact Massachusetts and find out what they got. But
you'd think they would have taken care of those records, as important as they are, put them on microfiche or something. I mean, what
exactly
happens if the local place burns down? You're done then? You have no proof of anything?
Right. What if there's an EMP attack?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I know they spent a lot of money here back when I was in office. The state and federal government was giving grants out like crazy to digitize all the records. Actually, the procedure was that once you put it on digital media, which they were burning it onto disk at that time, then you were supposed to destroy the original, except in property and deeds, you don't destroy anything ever, even when you're digitizing it. So one of the things was to get rid of some of the paperwork, like, you know, the normal mumbo jumbo stuff of the day-to-day operations.
Right.
You know, and get rid of that. And they said, look, the law says you only have to keep it for this many years. And the one clerk said, well, we like to keep it longer. And he says the guy from the state says, why would you want to do that? Because that would just give people an opportunity to sue you when there's problems. See, they knew that if
yep.
you could get that information, they knew they made mistakes. So if they let the statute run out of how long they have to keep it, and then they destroy it, it's destroying evidence for you to pursue against the county when you come up with something like a land patent that you know, or where they violated, they didn't do something right.
Right, so right.
I was kind of taken aback by that, you know, where the state's going, well, we don't want to give the people material that they can sue us with. I mean, this is our servant government. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
Got to get rid of that before we get sued. I mean, that's real nice.
Right. Back in 1970, when I first started getting into this fight, I went to some seminars from Howard Griswold and a bunch of David DeRemer and a bunch of other guys, and I started learning about the property, the taxes, and so forth. And they had a copy of the New York State Constitution, in which I also had a copy of it at the time. I don't know where it is now. It's gone. But Article 10 of the New York State Constitution, the original one, said that all property shall remain allodial, and the people are sovereign and have the right to have their property as freehold. Well, guess what? That Article 10 is no longer. They got rid of that puppy.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder why.
I don't have no idea. Right, right.
That's just
so. If you could ever research the New York State Constitution way, way back, Article 10, when it was in there, read it and grab it. You know, hang on to it and put it in the our archives.
Right.
Let us know because that's very important. Because even though it's not in the Constitution, like the 13th Amendment, that's still there. They can't get rid of it. They just override it.
Right, right. That's what I was going to say. And they just make stuff disappear. I don't even know if they override it or whatever, you know.
Right.
You could amend the Constitution by going through the proper channels of amendment. And I mean, you said they got rid of Article 10.
Yep.
What did they do to get rid of it? They didn't amend the New York State. Did they do it at one of the amendments? The New York State Constitution was amended to, I don't know how many times it was. I forget now when I was doing it, but it's quite a few times since way back when. You know, it's been amended. I don't know, 10 or 12 times, I think.
Yeah, I think I said it was removed for nefarious reasons, of course.
Yeah, but how do they remove it? The only way they can remove it is during a convention, no?
I would think so. I would think so. I don't remember any conventions that that did that, nor did they even list why or how they went about doing that. Don't you think they have to say, well, they did it on such and such a date by whatever continental or whatever Congress they used?
Yeah, I would think so. I just got a note here from Nikki that says New York State Constitution, she thinks it was amended in 1987. That might have been the last time it was done, you know, and I believe that that's probably true. But
right.
When they amend the Constitution, what did they amend? I mean, in 1987, well, what was the extent of the amendment? And I mean, if it had nothing to do with the... Oh, she said 1968, not 1987.
Right, probably 68 is when they took it out.
Hmm. Well, that would have to be part of the amendment paperwork then, right?
Right, you would think so. But I tried I tried researching it to find out more about that Article 10, and I can't seem to find anything on it. It just says it does not exist. Of course it does.
Right. So, anyway, I don't know. Maybe that's what's good about these calls, because you can put it out there, and maybe somebody can find it, you know. And,
if anybody ever runs across it, it's important.
Right, and I mean, we have members that work in registrar's office and stuff. I mean, we have people with lots of knowledge. That's like, you know, that's why Crystal's doing so well. Crystal worked in those county offices, so she knows the lingo. She knows the procedure, you know.
Right, right.
That's why they're having trouble with her, because, you know, knowledge is a powerful thing when you know how to implement it or where to use it, you know what I mean?
Yep, yep. She's doing great.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to try to get it back on here now that I'm done with you.
Yeah, hi, Don. Thank you very much. I just wanted to bring that forward.
Okay, let us know if you come up with anything, and of course, we'll be doing the same here.
Absolutely, you know? I sure will. If anybody needs any information on that, they can get a hold of me, you know, through the website or whatever, or,
yep.
You know, I can give my phone number or whatever, or my email address. They can get my email off the website, can't they, and contact me?
Yeah, I believe so, and I'm, you know, look at, I know, if they get a hold of Jan's got your number, I mean.
Right, right. Feel free to give it out. I have no problem with it.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. God bless you guys. Thank you. Good night.
Right. Oh, I think I just got rid of Crystal. Okay. It looks like Cynthia from Massachusetts, you've been unmuted.
Oh, hi, Gerard. How are you?
Good.
How are you? Oh, that's good.
Hanging there.
Yeah, I bet. first I'd just like to say I just completed through the last chapter 6 of the Government by Consent.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't convey my gratitude and love for all of you guys for what you put together for us to educate us Americans. It just moved me so much. I learned so much from it, and I'm keeping it close to my heart. So I just want to put that, how much I appreciate it, and I'm spreading the word to people. I think it's so valuable. As Jefferson said, we need to have an educated people, yes.
Yep.
Yes, and it's because, and I share responsibility too, because I really didn't know all of this, and here I have a master's degree, so it's kind of embarrassing, but it's never too late. Now with that in mind, it all depends on if we ever get this whole We the People thing going again, and I'm not feeling really too confident. I pray about it. I I'm a Bible believer. I pray all the time. I'm in repentance to God about all of this that, I was ignorant about, And I hope to have an opportunity to serve in some capacity, But I just have to say, there's a loud noise going on. Can you hear it? Gerard?
Yeah, you're echoing back through somebody. Let me see here. Go ahead, talk.
Okay, somebody. Yeah, so I just want to just put that out, how much I appreciate the. I can tell all the work you all put into it. It took a lot of work and a lot of love for the We the People to do that. So thank you. God bless you all for that. I basically am really praying really hard. I'm actually repenting for my ignorance and the ignorance of the rest of the We the People. You know what I mean? I mean, because it was so far from the original intent and, how things were set up. In fact, I don't know. John once said he doesn't think the Constitution is gone. But I personally, from my experience, I don't think we have a Constitution, Or if we do, then what's happening, people are getting cherry-picked by computer, whatever. People, I don't know how they do this, but people are getting picked off like a bunch of, a target and being utterly decimated and liquidated. It's like the, vultures descending in, i.e. attorneys, and they're just destroying families.
They're not operating under the Constitution. They're violating it, and they're actually
right.
They're
so
actually
obviously
committing treason every day.
Right.
We got a president. Right. We got a president now that's using the T word, which everybody it was so death afraid of. You weren't ever allowed.
Right.
To use.
Right. God bless them for that. God bless them for that. I hope
that means the Constitution's not gone, because the information's still out there, but nobody's reading it. Nobody's looking for it.
Right. I heard it was put into a trust, actually, because, I'm not sure how far anybody can actually get with this whole crazy fake debt, that they're pinning on us, Americans. Depending on us, and I think that has a lot to do with why they're cherry-picking us Americans left and right. I mean, my whole family got decimated. I got illegally, unlawfully forced out of my house. And when you talk about, community of safety, that's what – everything's so wonderful, depending on if the people is virtuous. And I'm really questioning that. Number one, this ignorance, we all are, have – fall short of that. But now what they're doing, they're setting up these bizarre okay, legitimate networks, community networks, but they're also within the networks is some perversion group, and they're going around, they're pitting people, neighbors against neighbors, and people are getting, you know, little write-offs on their mortgages or little repairs on, you know, they're getting little perks to go after other neighbors. You know, and so this is not really virtuous, all this stuff going on. And
it sounds like a communist system to me. You got your neighbors telling on your neighbors. Sounds like what the communists did.
Well, yeah, that's what's happening right now. It's really, I was talking to somebody. I'm not in Massachusetts. I had to leave. You know, I filed so many complaints. It's like nobody's doing anything. So I had to, I had to hightail it out of there. I'm praying that the state turns around and does right by we the people, and mainly by right by God, because at this point, last year I kept trying to figure out what is going on in my situation, and it's I love to talk to you or John D privately about some things, irregularities, and basically what I'm doing is just, doing a list of, I call, outrages. I mean, they're so outrageous, it's just really, it's just demonic, and so I'm making a list of it, and it's a bureaucratic system machine people are going through in family courts.
Have you read the paperwork that we prepared at the way in the beginning when we did the Coronado, and then we went down through?
Yes.
We mentioned all of that. That's all in that Coronado. Look at that. Coronado is not a court case in as far as we're petitioning the court. That's we the people coming together and saying, look at, you're wrong. You need to correct this. I mean, basically, it's like a vote of no confidence. In your parliament,
right?
Vote of confidence means you step down from office, is what it means. And of course, we used to whisper this. We didn't like to say it because we thought that maybe they wouldn't accept our paperwork if they knew. But technically, under Coronado, they only have so many days to answer, and then their charter is null and void. Which basically it already is because they didn't answer our Coronado.
Right. Well, nobody. I mean, it's all laid out. I mean, I think the work you guys been really, pushing, since you started, in 2014. And I was active in the beginning, but I had to spin off to find out what the heck was happening because I couldn't go to my neighbors because I was being stalked by some of them. You know what I mean? But
it's important to live in a small community where you can actually find, I'm going to say, a Christian community where the people live by those values. And I think that's most important. And I would move to that community if I thought it wasn't where I am now. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know where there is one in America. I mean, a lot of people are running around and looking, and some people have a nice foundation. We moved in there in 2005, but the whole mortgage contract was a big fraud, from day one. It's null and void as far as I'm concerned, and I have had papers. I think I have 20 years to, get some kind of remedy. But the whole thing is about remedy. And I'm hearing the stories of the people calling in. I mean, these people, we are being literally like living sacrifices, And
absolutely.
The people who are running around, I feel bad for them because they're working probably 80 hours a week to trying to keep their mortgage and pay college for the kids and stuff. And I feel bad for them, too. I think the people who are selling out the we the people to improve their situation or whatever their problem is, I pray they repent and turn around, because this country will not turn around when this neighbors attacking neighbors. Now, I'm sitting here, I'm walking around, I'm praying to God constantly because I feel like I'm a walking contradiction. There was a time, people can argue against this point, but let's just say the Constitution was geared towards a better union, okay? It was a hopeful. Everybody really should be entitled to the Bill of Rights and everything if they're born or naturalized in this country, you know? But it's, apparently that's not taking place. And people are being cherry-picked, and they're pitting people against people. And I think we need to, you know, we need to really step back, and there needs to be some kind of truth and reconciliation thing. I mean, it's so systemic. It's so entrenched. And it has a lot to do with these attorneys, you know, what they turned, just like commerce, piracy has entered the land, and they're ripping at us, and they're like a bunch of vultures, you know, descending on people and just ripping their assets, stealing from them, tearing apart families, taking kids, putting them God knows where, and stealing their homes, you know? And so, I mean, it's so, it's such a way that we become like blamed, you know. They've gotten people mind controlled, thinking, well, you lost your home because you're a loser, you don't work, you know you're a bum, you know, right. That's why you're homeless, you know what I mean? And they got it all, and that's not the case, you know. And many of us can actually prove it. So, you know, I'm not, you know, trying to like beat people over the head. I'm just appealing because I'm repenting on behalf of the neighbor who is getting little perks going after another neighbor. You know, so
well, look,
you know,
you
I'm
just laid the whole problem out pretty nicely, and it's right. And basically, it's like you're kind of repeating the case that we put in because we touched on all that
right.
stuff. Right now,
yeah.
the child trafficking, child people disappearing, we laid it all out.
Oh,
and put it
Lord, yeah.
But,
yes.
but you see, if you look at the whole picture, it looks very discouraging. And the only way that this is going to get fixed is with a miracle.
Right.
And I think
I think
you're witnessing that in progress right now.
Yes.
Sometimes
yes.
you can't recognize every corner of it or every side of it
right.
because it's so big. It's hard to take
right.
the whole thing in. But when you step
right.
back, look at we are the new Jerusalem in a sense because,
yes.
you know, when Christ came and the Jews crucified him and then he went to the Gentiles, that was us. That's what this nation
yes.
was the only other nation
yes.
that was founded under his law. And so I think that
yes.
we're
it's
the
so
last
beautiful.
Remaining example. And that's why
yes.
that's why this has to be saved. It has to be saved because God wants it saved, and he's going to give us the methodology, and he's going to, I mean, we know the methodology, but what we need is we need those people to wake up. You know what I mean?
We need to be, yes. And in the spirit of forgiveness, because I'm not even mad at, you know, the neighbor.
Well,
just, you know, I'm not even,
just
to have a spirit. Yes,
yeah.
a spirit of repentance, and that's the key. And I'm, you know, standing in the gap for this nation. I pray that the Treasury goes after all these offshore accounts and go into all that money stolen and, you know, what's stolen from the American people and, you know, so on, and return it, basically. And it, you know, I mean, we have so many resources here. We shouldn't have to attack each other like this, you know, and I see
right.
it. I don't watch the news. It's so negative, you know, and I'm just
standing.
Well,
that's
standing.
Because they've been
explaining.
Selling America down the tubes, like Donald Trump said, you know, everything was not for us. All these trade deals and stuff, they've been undermining our sovereignty, and now
yes.
it's coming home to roost. But, you know,
right.
by the grace of God, we you know, people are waking up, and there is stuff happening. And I'm just telling everybody,
I hope so.
Now
yeah.
is the time for people to really become engaged. I remember my mother teaching us how to type, and one of the things they used to say, when she was a kid, what they had in the typing class, what they used to type, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. That's
oh, my God. Stop it. My mother taught me that, too, and I can do that with my eyes closed.
Right. But, you know, we need to reinstitute that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're yeah. talking about that in the 40s and what was going on in the 40s. They were putting in the Federal Reserve, and now's the time for all good men. They knew it. somebody knew it. Yeah. Somebody put it out there because they knew that the beast was in the system. They knew it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But you know what?
Yes.
Now is really the time for all good men to come to the Aether country.
Yes.
If it's not now, then it's never, basically.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, back then was the time, but we let it go. We let it go.
Yes.
I mean, parents were thinking when John Kennedy got up there and talked about the guys that move by at night and under coven and all this stuff, and then boom, they shot him. I just wonder why everybody didn't go in the streets and say that's enough of this crap. But you know what? We were too innocent, and they didn't want to believe that their government would do this. They didn't want that they actually, you know, facilitate the killing of a president that was very dear to most of the people in the country, and it was bad back then. We've gotten to the point now that all that stuff is coming out, and that's going to go on the people, and they got to use that energy in a positive way instead of a negative way. See the cabal and the evil Illuminati that's in the world. They don't mind revealing that as long as they can get people to riot over it. You know what I'm saying? They want chaos because through chaos they can take control. But our whole education thing and everything we're doing is a positive force in order to have an orderly change the right way. And that doesn't mean somebody won't hang the rope, because there's some people that need to hang because that's the only thing for them. Look at it. Yeah. May God have mercy on your soul. Pull the door and let them fall.
Yes. No, I think you all are really exercising wisdom. It's taken a long time. I'm just taking a long time to get everything all upside down and corrupt like this. So I see your wisdom. I mean, and everything you've done has been true.
They took them 100 years to get us here. They were very patient.
Right.
Very patient. My mother used to say they go one step backwards and two step forward. So whenever the people started waking up, they'd back up. You know, I mean, they gave us Reagan for president because they knew that at that time people were fed up. So they gave us him to make us feel better. But they had no intention of ever doing anything, you know what I mean? And then he got a bullet in the chest to calm him down because he was getting too big for his britches, and they basically told, you know, they put him back in his place.
Yes, but so, you know what? He put the Bible back, put it back on the, they signed the
videos
Bible.
That I never saw on the news. Years later, after he was, not president, I saw these videos where he went and said prayers for the nation and things like that in his speeches. You never saw it on NBC or any of these news stations.
Right.
I never saw that stuff.
This is how I look at it. It being some kind of living sacrifice, right? My family and other people suffering, right, unjustly. Either, we all rise up and we try to turn this around, or God's going to do it for us, you know? That's how it's going to happen, because it can't continue like this.
When you have somebody who's the leader of a nation that speaks God's word from a microphone out there to the people, do you know how powerful that is? I mean, they're in tradition and in the Bible, there have been whole cities and nations saved by one guy saying the right thing. Bring me one man.
Yes.
Bring me one.
God. That's beautiful.
That's no different today than it was back then. But look,
God bless you, and thank you so much. I just really endorse that course for anybody listening, and just spread the word. So God bless you. And take care. Thanks.
Thank you, Cynthia. Yeah. Bye.
Right.
Okay. Terry from New Jersey, right?
Yeah. How you doing?
Good. How you been?
Good. I'm calling about an article. I sent it to you earlier. It's from a publication called Above the Law, and that pretty much says it all. But it's actually a very well-written publication. But what I wanted to talk to you about is these conviction integrity units that are popping up and what it says in this article. Only about three sentences I want to bring your attention to. It says, what else do conviction integrity unit lawyers need? A sense of fundamental fairness, according to Derek Hamilton. He talked about the danger of conflicts of interest. And then it says, what if a prosecutor handling conviction review worked on a case in some capacity, perhaps even just informally, or what if that prosecutor is friends with the prosecutors whose work is being reviewed? When he went through the CIU process, he found that the prosecutor reviewing the case was overly deferential to the judgment of the prosecutor who got him wrongfully convicted in the first place. And he had to get this prosecutor removed from the investigation. This is such a farce, these conviction integrity units. You know, we just set one up in New Jersey, like within the last year. And it's kind of obvious that this is going to happen because, of course, do you think any prosecutor is going to get a conviction overturned if it might be remotely possible for one of his assistant prosecutors to be prosecuted? It's so bizarre. This is why you have to have common law jurors. You can't trust these people to investigate themselves. You know, they try to have the appellate courts and the Supreme Court, and they're trying to brainwash everybody into thinking that these things actually work.
No, because and you know what? You're right, because the conflict of interest runs so deep, and they make sure that it does. That's how they operate their system. They got everybody on the take. You know, there's a pecking order of thievery and graft and corruption in government, and the top guy gets the most, but everybody all the way down the line has a certain share, and that's what I call their pecking order. So even the little guy has got his pocket stuffed full when he goes home, and they like that because they need that to happen to keep everybody in line. So the minute you open your mouth too much, they say, oh, well, remember we filled your pocket over there with them, whatever, you know, and that's how they keep control of the whole thing. And you're right, there's always a conflict of interest because they're born into it, they're brought into it under conflict, and they make sure you don't get in if you don't have a conflict. Or something, an impediment in your background. That's what they want. That's their trump card to control you.
Listen to this. I'm going to give you another example because I have this ongoing thing regarding my unlawful conviction in New Jersey, and I wrote a letter to the ethics committee regarding my lawyer who says that he lost my file. Now, the thing about it is that in a criminal case, your lawyer has an obligation to hold on to that file indefinitely. In other words, forever.
Right.
And I actually cited the case law when she set up the investigative interview. And I told her that, and I actually cited the law. So what does she do? She interviews the lawyer that I filed the complaint against, and I get a letter back from this investigating saying he didn't do anything wrong. He held the files for 7 years, okay? But that's not that, – you're not supposed, you know, to hold them for just 7 years. You're supposed to hold them forever. And she knows this, and so now what's happening is I have to go to appeal it. But you know what's really bizarre about this case is that for some reason, when she sent me this letter denying my charges against this lawyer, she also attached the text of my blog, which is called cleanupthecourts.blogspot.com. And what's so bizarre about this is that this blog is about 50 pages and documents very closely the conspiracy, you know, to steal $250,000. So now this is going on to their Well, this is already the ethics committee. It's going to their superiors, the ethics appeal. What are they going to do with this? I mean, this is just really bizarre because I make a lot of allegations, completely supported, about a criminal conspiracy involving a whole bunch of judges. What do they do at this point? Do they just put it in the round file? I mean, it's just very bizarre. And I'm not sure, I don't understand why she did that because, and it wasn't really germane to the case. It had nothing to do with it, whether or not the lawyer destroyed my files. So now she appears to be opening up a can of worms for the Ethics Appeal Committee. So I don't know. Very strange. I yield.
Yeah, you opened up something where they didn't want to go, I bet. But, you know, and like you said, they know, probably don't know.
I can't hear you.
I said you probably went in an area where they didn't want to go.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, but I'm not. It was a young woman. She's only 25 years old, and I'm kind of insulted that they would send somebody with this little experience to interview me with regard to this. But regardless, since I'm having trouble hearing you, I'll give you a call. There's another interesting thing that happened this week with regard to Gerald Nadler and Lydia's videos going viral.
Okay. Good. Well, that's good.
All right. I yield because I can't hear what you're saying, but I'm going to call back in later.
Okay.
Bye.
Great. Thanks. Bye. I don't know why he couldn't hear me, but I'm going to go ahead to the Stephanie from South Dakota. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey. God bless you guys.
Hey.
Hey, I was going to let you know, and I had sent Ron and Ron Flick and Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And you, these clips that Brent Alan Winters sent and is talking about on the role of women and the role of men, because men are to be in the militia, 17 to 45. It is not a job for women. They have their own job. And then the call last week that Brent Alan Winter spoke on, he clearly stated what men and women's roles are and where the proof came from and how it is that way there. And then also on National Earth, Brent does a show on Patriot Network and also Liberty Works Radio Network,
uh-huh.
And that today, that last 22 minutes, he clearly states again and often that it is men's job to be in the militia, and women have a totally different job. So it would be nice to have an expanded conversation with Brent Alan Winter so he could explain the roles of men and women, and because he's talked repeatedly on what happens if women are doing things there that the men are supposed to be doing. All right, I'll listen now. God bless you.
Okay, thank you.
We have Crystal in action again, if you want to call on her.
Okay, I will. Hang in here, let me get to... Crystal, are you there?
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How's it going? I tried to rouse you before, but I guess my voice wasn't loud enough.
Nah, I must have dozed off. I was like, but
how's it going?
The devil's day will not stop for nothing. But I do have all all my proof where my property had been paid off. I've got, I have the proof of claim and everything. As a matter of fact, it's so criminal what they have done to me. The attorney, the one on December 7th of 2014, when he sat there and when put his name on my property to start this illegal foreclosure, stating that on May 9th, 2011, that I had taken out a loan with the GE, Federal Credit Union, which I have never taken a loan with them. And then on May 11th, 2011, then they have it May 10th, 2011, and May 12th, the 3 dates the mortgage was released and paid off. Who got the $250,000? And see, I thank God, my husband, when he worked in the bank, I worked in the tax office. So paperwork, I had to file and dates and stuff like that. And I was saying this all along. So on the 9th, they said I had the loan. And 3 days later, I had 3 different mortgage release paid off. Who received the money? And those were the criminal dates right there. I just received a letter today from the corrupted attorneys and the judge, the same one who had recused himself from my case, Jennings, who's a retired judge who they've been stealing everyone's home, which is criminal what they've been doing. I asked, am I a public servant of this court? So I found all my documents and everything, even with the court, showing the proof of claim. And I asked, could I speak to Mr. GE? I found all that. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And they never responded. I did the subrogation papers, never responded. When we go into the courts here, it's between the judge and the attorney. And that's what I said, am I a public servant of this court? He said, no. I said, is this my common law jury? He said, no, he is the common law jury.
He's the common law jury. Okay.
He said, I'm the jury. He goes, I'm the judge of the jury. I said, you just committed treason. I want your resignation. That's when he told me to get the head out of this court. Again, the treason, the perpetrating of a fraud, and, when you go into the courts here, you're guilty because it's between the judge and the attorneys. And in the beginning, I told everyone, how many attorneys do you have in your state? Well, we have over 33,000 attorneys, which what just came out recently, which we were saying all along, because here I never took a law class in my life, and I'm dyslexic. And I said, and here I went into the courtroom all these years, which, as I said, I didn't do it by myself. Jehovah God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit, first and foremost, and also NLA, and, you've all been so wonderful and supportive. And it's just like asking them and showing the proof of claim. But everybody who goes into the courtroom, you are guilty. You're not even proven it. And it's between the judge and the attorney. When I ask for a common law jury, anything over $20, you are entitled to have a common law jury. I asked them for their proof of the Foreign Age Act of 1938. They are not even registered because they are under the laws of Great Britain. And when you contact Washington, as a matter of fact, I found it very interesting. When Michael Cohen, the attorney who was Trump's attorney, when they asked him, how long have you been his attorney? He said, oh, about 10 and a half years. Well, I said, Trump's only been president for 2 years, so obviously a little over 2 years. I said, so who put all the paperwork together for him? And so also it came out something about the Foreign Agent Act with the jurisdiction, which now they're sitting there spilling their guts. But what Cohen did, Michael Cohen did, is what all these attorneys have been doing, robbing and stealing from the people, you know? But my case, and now it, you can also go on the website, on the, because it's I had it e-filed. My case against, it's GE with my name. And they had to show the proof of claim, and it's all criminal what they've done to me. So what they have done to me, I think they did to mostly everyone, but a lot of people didn't pick that up, you know. And you can never change a mortgage or anything unless you sign. Who signed our name to change the mortgage? Okay. So that's all illegal. Another thing, what happened to me on January 19th, that was a federal national holiday. It was Martin Luther King's birthday. Courts and everything are closed. When I was in court back in the beginning of, was it, when the judge said, it was back in October, and she goes, well, I'm sorry, we're going to have to take you out. And they said, they're going to have to take it around the 19th, then on the 19th of January. She goes, we can't do that because that's a federal national holiday, which I said, unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize what holiday they were really talking about. I said, wait a minute, we just got over Christmas, what have you. And it was Martin Luther King's birthday, and that's a federal national holiday. So all of a sudden, she goes, the courts are closed, we can't do it. And they go, we have to do it because if we don't do it, she'll be able to keep her house. She goes, well, the 19th it will be. This is the other criminal activity, what they did. On my, so it was on the 19th, they had the police there, in which they I was never served by the sheriff or nothing. And they had the audacity to send me the bill for the local police department. As a matter of fact, when I went to the police department to file a criminal complaint against the attorneys and the court 2 weeks ago, they told me, we're not filing nothing. And then one of my relatives had passed away, and the nurse's aide stole the whole estate and lied and said she was the daughter, which was criminal. And they turned around, and this attorney falsified the information about a will, and I was like, wait a minute, we don't know her, him, whatever. And they gave the criminal the whole estate. So we get, I mean, it's just so much blatant criminal activity going on in our state. Getting back to when they foreclosed on my property on the 19th. So they put the sign in front of the house, and again, the 19th was a national, it was a federal holiday, so the courts were closed. This is what this attorney did, this Mark Krausner. He went on the 18th of January, terminated my right and my name from my property, which was paid in full, and I have all the elderly disability exemption on my property, and put his name on my property on the 18th before the illegal foreclosure even went through. I picked that up. I said, wait a second. And so when I got the paperwork today from them, on there it says the foreclosure went through the 22nd of January, because the 22nd was when the courts were open. They falsified and lied and changed the document. This is, I mean, it's so blatant criminal what they have done with my property and what they have done to a lot of other people's property. But it was just like every single day I picked it out and, you know, it's, so. But that is what's going on now. So I have to do, I guess, well, we are definitely filing the criminal complaint. Another thing what I've done, and I think everyone needs to do, everyone definitely needs to contact your Congress, your senators, your state representative, your governor, the attorneys. And what I did was I faxed them all from our, you know, senator, congressman, Blumenthal, and all the rest of them, everybody in Washington and in your state. You send them their copies. So this way, when anything goes on, they cannot say, we was unaware. Also, you can sit there, put it together, and start sending it to the media, the TV media. So we got going on, we sent it to quite a few different TV stations. And they're all investigating basically what's going on. We are probably going to be putting something else together pertaining to... you know, our cases and stuff like that. And we're going to try to pack the court on Monday when we go in there, because this is total, total criminal on what is going on. And I'd like to see, you know, what's going to happen next Monday when I go in there, because on next Monday, when I go there, they want to eject me from my property. And they put the new owners' names, which they're a group of attorneys, and also the GE, Federal Credit Union, who started all this mess along with these attorneys. It's a nightmare. I just cannot believe. But as I said, I'm praying and staying close, Jehovah, and I thank you for all the love and support. But everybody, please contact all your congressmen and all the rest of them, because you know what? And they said a third of them are attorneys, and all the property that they've been foreclosing on are the lawyers. And they're not even under our Constitution. I'll never forget what Trump said. He goes, they can't even convict, he goes, the judges, attorneys, he goes, they're nothing. They can't even, what did he say? They can't even convict a fly. They have no jurisdiction. And he's like, and he also made mentioning, because he found out that the sheriff is the highest in the land, you know. But it's only, again, the proof of claim. Speak to Mr. Whoever you're, Mr. GE Federal Credit Union, Mr. WPCA, or whomever. Another thing has been going on, too. I've been speaking to other people in our state now. Now, this one, two of my friends, one, they already exempted her supposed mortgage, another fraud mortgage of $81,000, so she don't have to pay nothing back. And they're letting her stay in her house. And what they're doing is on our, what is it, foreign, no, wait a minute. It's Federal Reserve or Federal Exchange or whatever. Federal Reserves. They use our name and our name and our Social Security number to get the Federal Reserve so they can be paid out. And as a matter of fact, this is a heart-wrenching thing. I've owned all my property. I've owned several properties, paid everything off in full. And as of what they did to me, they auctioned my house off for $170,000, which my property, which they've embezzled already. It was first, I thought it was over a quarter of a million, but it's almost like $700,000 that they embezzled from me. When I sat there and started tallying it up, and I said, oh my God, they are going to take my property for $170,000, and all the attorneys, they're going to divvy it all up, and then guess what I walk away with? Nothing. They said they're going to take a loss. How on earth are you going to take the loss when you never invested not one cent in my life? So in other words, they are going to leave me homeless and penniless. And this is so criminal on what they're doing, and everybody better wake up, because all the property is going to the criminal attorneys who are not even registered under the Foreign Agent Act. They're all perpetrating the fraud. So now, and it's just like, and you know, we've been getting people, recruiting people, and teaching people, you know, because people are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And thank you, because we need the support of the National Liberty Alliance and other groups that are now starting to come together. And it's funny because now, because of all the notoriety that we've had in the past on the TV, now everybody's like, oh, well, she's a part of this group. No, I'm not a part of any group. I'm in NLA. You know, and that's who I've been, you know. I just want to share and help people. And it's just like with these, like we have a WPCA, which is another criminal bill. It's a double sewer bill. We pay a sewer bill and get taxed on it. And then they use a WPCA bill, which is a made up fake bill, which is not even worth 4 cents, and everybody's losing their home over 4 cents. So, I mean, it's just, people need to do more communicating. But as I said, this information definitely needs to be in Washington, draining the swamp. I said, now we understand what Trump, I didn't always agree with them, but I said, oh, okay, now we understand what draining the swamp is, because it's the people in Washington and the Congress and all the Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. They're all liars and thieves, because they're all benefiting by what's going on, and it's terrible. Is there any questions that, you know, that everybody got to follow through on that? And hopefully all this stuff will be over very, very soon. Is there anything else I missed? I got to go and do an objection. What do I need to sit there and follow tomorrow? Do an objection of criminal activity, or, you know, how would I file that? Hello? Hello?
Gerard, are you muted?
Gerard?
He says no. We can't hear you.
Huh?
I just got a note from Gerard, says he's not muted, but I can't hear him. Can you?
No.
Wonder what that is. Well, I just muted and unmuted.
Huh?
Oh, he just muted and unmuted. Somehow you're locked out of the vocal.
I am?
No, Gerard is.
Yeah, I am mute. I muted him and unmuted him just to see if that would work, but it didn't.
Yeah, he said he's not muted, but I can't hear him. Can you, Terry?
No, I can't hear him. But Brent's here.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had a couple of questions.
That'll give him time to...
Brent, should we ask Brent a question to give Gerard a little time to get back online?
That's a good idea.
Are you ready, Brent? I see you. Yeah, there you go.
Hello? Okay.
You're unmuted, Brent. So.
I'll hang loose, Crystal.
Hi, how you doing?
Can you hear me, Brent?
Yeah, I've got you. What did you want me to do?
We have a question that earlier when you weren't online yet, when we were doing questions, if you got a minute, we could answer that.
Oh, what was it? Can you remember it?
I will read it for you, okay?
Okay, yeah.
The all caps letters are made reference to in Black's Law, 4th edition, 1951. Can you comment on it? Ens Legis. A review of government correspondence from such agencies as the IRS, banks, courts, and so forth deal with you exclusively through corrupted versions of your true name. These organizations insist on dealing with you only via the all caps corruption of your true name. The military also designates its personnel exclusively in all capital letters. Names constructed outside the bounds of English grammar and the prescriptions of law are corporately colored trade names. Legally speaking, there is a term that identifies such constructs or entities as ens legis, defined as followed. In Latin, a creature of the law, an artificial being as contrasted with a natural person, applied to corporations considered as deriving their existence entirely from the law. And that's from Black's Fourth. Can you comment on that?
Yes. Just to start back where I've started before with respect to capital letters. Capital letters are indiscriminately placed all over our Declaration of 76 and our Constitution of the United States. There seems to be no rhyme or reason why they're there. I've never read anybody that could ever identify any reason that some words are capitalized in the middle of sentences. I don't know of any other or of any words that are all caps there, but the reason for that is it's not typewritten. It's my conclusion after much studied opinion, I'll put it that way, that capital letters in our legal documents are the product of the typewriter and the things that you can do with a typewriter. Now, I've read that entry in Black's, and Black's is a wonderful book. I consult it a lot. But keep in mind, Black's is not the final word on anything, any more than any other man's word is the final word on anything. Mere men don't get to have final words, but as a matter of law, of course, when we want to know what the final word is in the courts, that's not the final word either, but for purposes of the courts and the disputes that arise there, the final word is what the courts or how the courts apply particular unchanging principles of law. That's what the courts are supposed to do. People say courts don't make law. Well, courts do set standards. That's their job. That's why we have a judicial branch. If we were like the rest of the countries of the world and just said, well, we want the courts to support what the legislature says, or we want the courts to support what the dictator says, and by the way, that's what they do in other countries, almost all countries in the world, judges in courts are not even lawyers. They're just trained to be judges and support the machinery of the state, and they're no more than a cog in a machine. That's all a judge is. He's a bureaucrat. He's a civil servant. He has an equivalent of a GS rating. He doesn't know anything about the law. He's a piece of machinery. Well, that's not what we have in America in our common law courts. Our common law courts are separation of powers, and the power of the courts is to apply the law in individual instances in a way maybe it's never been applied before because a particular situation and a particular problem we see has never arisen before. Well, that's back to who has authority here? Well, Black's Law Dictionary doesn't. And I think if you go to that entry, it's the same entry that a friend of mine who directed me to it, and I looked at it, and I said, well, this doesn't give us any law. It doesn't tell us that this is any law, that all letters are in caps. It talks about a style of writing. It identifies a style of writing where capital letters are used. But if you can't find a statute, a regulation, a decree from a president or a governor, if you can't find something in the Bible that says all caps mean this or all caps mean that, then it's my position. Then it, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, but you know what?
Wait. No, I just need to finish. I was asked a question. I'm going to finish my answer, and then if you or somebody else wants to talk, they can. But and by the way, the things I'm saying are my comments. They're not the comments of National Liberty Alliance or anyone else. There is no law that anybody's ever showed me or that I've ever been able to find that says that capital letters mean that men are corporations. Now, does that mean that the government does not look at you as a corporation? Well, it may. And maybe there's a conspiracy. I've been in the courts. I've been around other lawyers. I've read the books they read, some of them, not all of them. I read a whole lot of other books they haven't read. I've read the Bible, and I don't see anything in the law that says all caps mean those things. Now, there's a fella in Australia that promotes the idea that all caps is very, very evil. And he takes his Bible out, and he shows how in the Bible that the name of God is in all caps. Of course, it's not the name of God. It's in English, and it's translated the Lord, which is a rabbinic practice that was picked up by the translators of the King James Bible. It's not what God said. God wrote the Bible, the Old Testament. He wrote in Hebrew. He had written it in Hebrew. And the all caps doesn't occur there. It occurs in the English translation because that's a rabbinic practice. That doesn't mean it's the law. Matter of fact, there's no reason for it. It shouldn't be done. It is done. I recognize that. But my conclusion is it's the result of typewriters, which arose after in the late 1800s. All caps became very prominent to emphasize certain things. When maybe you've seen it. You see a trust document or a contract. It'll have the names of the parties. Now, this is a private contract. It is the custom in America today to put the names of the parties in all caps. That's not the courts doing it. That's just people doing it, parties making a written contract, memorializing their contract on a piece of paper. I mentioned last week, this was encouraging to me, I'm filing papers in federal court, federal appellate court, and I'm rereading the rules because the rules are changing. The local rules, not the federal rules, the local rules, which fall within the federal rules, each circuit has local rules, and what they want, how they want papers filed, what kind of type they want. And this particular federal circuit court says we discourage the use of capital letters except to capitalize the first letter of a name or a special place like a town. We discourage the use of capital letters, especially words with all capital letters. Now, that's a federal appellate district court saying that. And I believe the reason they're saying it, because, again, with the typewriter, arose the custom of capitalizing whole words. Now the typewriter is obsolete. It's obsolete. I've got a book around here, read it a few years ago. The name of it is Your Mac is Not a Typewriter. And amazingly, though, with the Mac, we still are prone to follow the rules of typewritten texts. For example, with typewriters, that was interesting, Gerard talking about now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party. My mother, just like his, set me down at a typewriter and taught me how to type that out, and that's how I was supposed to learn how to type. I never did learn how to type, but she tried, God bless her soul, to teach me, not knowing computers would become so important. But the Mac or the laptop, the PC, is not a typewriter. No longer is it proper, as we did with typewriters, to put two spaces between sentences. No longer is it necessary or proper to justify both sides of a paragraph. No, with legal writings, traditionally, the courts want you to justify just the left side. And no longer do we underline the names of cases in our briefs. We don't do that anymore. You can. They'll let you. But they don't want you to, because that's what you did with a typewriter. Why did you do it with a typewriter? Because with a typewriter, you couldn't italicize the letters, so you underlined the names of the cases if you'd cite a case. Now the courts encourage you to use all italics letters. But back to this capitalization thing. I don't capitalize names in my legal writings, and I have or my briefs. I haven't done it for a long, long time. I got sick of it, and I'll tell you why I didn't capitalize them. Because capital letters, if a word is all caps, all studies show, and all experience shows, it's hard to read. I can read stuff that's written in lowercase a lot faster and easier without effort than I can all capital letters. Capital letters are a pain in the neck, and the courts are finally coming around to realize that. But I have seen, to back to the question, I have not seen any evidence that there's any law that says all capital letters are an attempt to make a man a corporation, or refer to a corporation, a fictional corpse, a fictional body. Now, I'll end with this and say, that's not saying it, that the courts or some judges might not look at it that way. I don't know what's in their minds, but if there's nothing on the books that says it's law, I'm going to deny it entirely, and I'm never going to take that point of view until I see a law that says so. Now, that being said, somebody else may want to disagree. I'll get off and listen, and I've said my piece, but if Crystal, you wanted to say something, I think.
Yes, I did.
I'll take leave now. Go ahead.
Okay, when I first started learning about these capital letters and all that stuff, all righty, number one, where do you go and you see everything all in caps, and why wouldn't they have to be there? And when everything started coming into caps to me, and this is what I learned in the very beginning, I said, wow, where do you go where everything is on caps and you don't have to appear in court? It's a graveyard. When you go to a graveyard, all dead names are on caps. So that's when I said, I am a live executive. And that's when I started putting my name, a large C, small caps. And do you know, all my mail, everything they send me to this very day, capital C, small caps. And that's why I tell everybody, make sure, because when they go to court, you don't have to be there, because they treat everybody as a dead person. And who cannot appear in the court against an attorney or anybody? I just learned, what is the difference between an attorney and a lawyer? An attorney is the one who is corporate, who speaks in your behalf for a dead person. You have no say-so. A lawyer is one who assists you. I never knew the different meanings of that, you know. And but when they put all caps, you are a living being. And when you go to court, I am a living soul with blood running through my veins. I am a living human being. And I am the representative. Yeah.
Yes, Crystal.
You know, but I'm just saying, these are the things. And it's like, when they use a corporate name, I would like to speak to Mr. So-and-so. Whenever they use a corporate name. Another thing I just found out, too, when they sit there and use the... Every person who you deal with, you make sure you ask for their juris number. I found out in one of my cases, this so-called a judge who was disbarred as an attorney in 2007, who is now a judge, which is illegal. So that make sure you get the juris number for each person that you deal with. You know?
Yes, Crystal. I appreciate your abhorrence to the idea that somebody refers to you as a corpse. And I really believe there are people out there that do that kind of thing. And I really believe that the government, the evil empire, whatever part of it is evil, loves corporations. And they want everybody to be either incorporated or working for a corporation, because it makes their job easier, because corporations are under the control of the government. So though all those things are true, but I personally am not convinced I think that sometimes the government in cases, prosecutors and whatnot, want to torment patriot folk who they think believe that. And they'll use all caps just to torment them, just to make them mad, just to hype them up. And
People really didn't know any better.
Pardon?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, but it doesn't mean it's not true, even if they intend that. It's not true. And just say it's not true. You don't have to fight about it. Just say it's not true. I don't respond to that. My name's whatever your name is, and I like the idea that you put forward. I write, you say you write your name out all in lowercase, and you capitalize probably the first letter of your name. I do the same thing. I don't even put capital letters at the top of the brief. I just put, for if it's the federal district court, used to it always be in all capital letters. I don't do that anymore. And the reason I don't do that is because it's hard to read. It's downright tormenting. I'm competing with dozens of other people who are filing briefs, and I want the judges to notice mine. And the way to do it is to make it easier to read. Now, I put big letters, 14 point. Sometimes I try to put in my brief, because that's all studies show, that's easy to read. And these judges are reading about 600, 700 pages of people's briefs a day, and that'd get old. I wouldn't want to do it. They do it, and I want to make it as easy as I can for them. And when they say to me, we want this, this, and this, we want large letters, we don't want any capital letters, and that's what this federal district court says in their local rules, well, I'm refreshed all the pieces, and I pass that along to you, folk, too, as refreshing news. They don't even want it.
And
I like to hear that. Maybe it's something that'll catch on, but go ahead.
And also authenticating our names. Like, for example, on all of our birth certificates, which blew me out the water, if you're born, like, say you're born April 3rd, 5 days later, you got your birth, another birth date on there. And I said, oh, my God, everything is 5 days later. And that's when we're awarded to the state. Everybody needs to get their name authenticated through the state, and then you file it, and then you send it to Washington, authenticate your name. So you have, nobody cannot use your name, and you have the power over your own name, but there's a process that you have to go through. But I said, oh, my God, so if we think our birthdays are one day, look at your birth certificate, and it's 5 days later down at the bottom where it's changed. All words, and I said, oh, my God. So we also discovered that it's like learning, because here, these people are controlling our lives through our signatures.
You make another important point, Crystal, and the point is this, that it is authority given to us from our Maker, that we have the power over not only our own names, but the names of our children. And nobody questions that. It's something we do by the strongest of custom. I have the power to name my children. And my parents had the power to name me, and then once I have that name, I have the power to discard it. And I have the power to take up another name. And when a woman gets married, she doesn't ask permission from anybody. And she does. There's no law that says she can do this or not do this. But women, traditionally in America, have taken their husband's names. Now, if they choose not to do that, that's another matter. But they don't ask permission to do it. They don't go to the courthouse to change their name, as the evil empire is now telling us we must do. No, you just do what you want to do because it's your name. And that's power and that's authority. And by the way, our Maker gives us that early bit of authority to do that and have that power over our names. It's written in the Bible itself. And that's, of course, the laws of nature's God. That's our second volume of our fundamental laws, Americans, put into our Declaration of 76. I have a client in the Midwest who's being prosecuted criminally because he has chosen, when he became a Christian man, he's all about 60 years old now. When he became a Christian man 30 years ago, he changed his name. He noticed in the Bible that when men were born from above, that God gave him a new name. Simon became Peter. Abram became Abraham. And he had other examples too. And if you look, you can find them. And of course, Sarai and Sarah, there's another example. But he changed his name. And the government went after him after he had this name and used it consistently for 30 years. They're after him now, and they're trying to prosecute him and throw him in jail. And they told him, you can't change your name unless you go to the court and get permission and put in the proper papers. He said, that's baloney. And, of course, he's got the law to back him up. It's all in the statutes, and it's all in the case law. And as far as I know, every state of our union's that way. You can go to court and change your name that way and make it official and record it at the courthouse, but you don't have to do that. There's nothing in our law that says you have to do that. And as I said a while ago, women have been doing that for centuries, changing their names or not changing them or altering them. I know men that have gone by their first name or their second name for half their life, and then change it to their to the other, whether it be the first or the second, because they wanted to do that. Then that became official. I never went by Brent Allen Winters for many years of my life, and then I got older and I said, well, my mother gave me a middle name, and I'd be foolish not to use it. What good is it if I don't use it? So instead of saying and signing papers Brent Winters, for the last several decades now, I've said my name is Brent Allen Winters. That's my business. I decided to do that. And God help us if we ever get to the point that we don't have power over names. Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I want to make a comment about it. Crystal, I heard the moderator say a while ago there were other people on here, and I don't want to keep other people from having an opportunity to talk, but I appreciate your comments. Back to you, Gerard, whoever else is there.
I remember way back when we were first starting in L.A., we had these little videos that explained, you know, loss of liberty and all these cute little videos. And one of them was about the all caps name. I don't know if we still have it up, but I remember it talked about the different ways of signing your name and what that terminology was and how, like, you know, if you use the first letter capital and the rest of them small, that was called Capitis whatever. But I remember Capitis Diminito, and I looked it up, and it's on Wikipedia, and it says Capitis Diminito or Capitis Diminuto, diminished capacity, is a term used in Roman law referring to the extinguishing of either in part or in whole a person's former status and legal capacity. There were three changes of state or conditions attended with different consequences: maxima, media, and minima. And so then they explain that maxima is the greatest, capita diminutum maxima involved the loss of liberty. And this video that we had, I realized, was saying that when you sign your name in all caps, that's taking the lowest status of a person. It says loss of liberty, citizens, and formerly and family, that is to say being made a slave or a prisoner of war. Capitis diminuto media, the next change of state, capitis diminuto media consisted of a loss of citizenship and family without any forfeiture of personal liberty. And then capitis diminuto minima, the least charge of state, change of state, capitis diminuto minima, consisted of a person ceasing to belong to a particular family without loss of liberty or citizenship. So I don't know what that all means, but obviously it's a construct of Roman law, and we know what kind of trouble Roman law has crept into our common law, right?
That's right. I'm glad you brought that up at the end, because I didn't know exactly where you were going, but we're used to capital letters from the Roman world, and we see Roman insignias on ancient pictures, on ancient monuments, they're all in caps, and the Roman numerals are all in caps. I'll bring up one other point that's significant. There was a time after the life on earth of Jesus Christ when the New Testament documents came to be written in all capital letters. They're called uncials. And the most important Greek manuscripts of the original tongues that we have are uncials. Every letter in the whole New Testament is printed on the manuscript, is handwritten in capital letters. But it came then later, before that, and in later centuries, they went back to all cursive and what we would call lowercase Greek letters. And the overwhelming majority of pushing 6,000 extant Greek manuscripts of the New Testament, handwritten manuscripts from the ancient world, more than any other ancient document by about 600 or 700 times. But most all of them are in lowercase letters. But the reason they put them in capitals, it became the custom at that time to put all writings in capital letters. It didn't change the meaning at all. And those documents are some of them, like Alexandrinus and Vaticanus, which is in the Vatican, and Alexandrinus Aleph, Sinaiticus, they call it. Those are very important manuscripts, all very large. And by the way, those manuscripts, it is believed, and I believe the evidence is pretty strong, were ordered to be printed by the Roman Emperor Constantine, who established or tried to reestablish Christianity as a state religion. And he ordered that X number of manuscripts be printed. And those are some of the most beautiful and well-printed manuscripts that we have, no question. But I just make the point, they're in all capitals. Does that mean anything special? No, it just meant that they were trying to show the majesty and the importance of those manuscripts, and Constantine was trying to attach to it the royal dignity of the Roman Empire at that time. But I don't know what all that means always, but I pointed out as a fact of history, capital letters have had important significance, but it, in that case, it wasn't a significance that was demeaning to anybody. It was just the opposite. I don't give it much thought, and again, I want to say the federal circuits have now come out and said, we don't want capital letters. We don't like them. What does that mean? Well, I'll leave that up to somebody else. Maybe they can figure that out. I think it's a good sign, though. Back to you, Gerard.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign, too. For me, it makes me feel better. You know, I can go in there and I don't have to do that. And, you know, there's so many secret signs and symbols and Masonic signs and symbols and all this other garbage that goes on today. And maybe that's even where it came from. They put some kind of secret meaning on it, and then it took off. I don't know. And I don't really care, because I just want to be free. Look, I'm gonna pick Robert here because we're getting close, and I want to see what he's got going here. So just bear. And there was a question that you could have answered, and maybe we'll do it next week. I'll remind Jan. It had something to do with the militias. I don't want to get into it right now, but next week when you come on, it was about, you know, shouldn't we be starting militias instead of committees of safety, and they'll follow, or something to that effect. But that's okay. We'll get that next week, I think. Just remember that question, Jan. Save it for him for next week, okay? Because I took a stab at it. I certainly will save it. Yeah. I just didn't think it was a good idea for National Liberty Alliance to go to push. I mean, look, we're all in the militia. We're all supposed to be part of the militia. From what is it, 15 to 45 anyway, so that's kind of where I went with it. But anyway, Robert, you've been unmuted. Go ahead. Hello? You think he was in there from before? That Robert over you? He looks like he came back around.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah,
I got you in the. Did you want to speak again? I you're in the queue. Maybe I never took you out.
No, not really.
Okay. So
what I wanted to talk about has been covered. So
okay, good.
Fine. Yep. Thank you.
So, yeah, you're welcome. I'm gonna go to Dan. Dan, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I hope this will help you guys a little bit. If you go to any English major in this nation, is major communication is to be English. If you ask any English major how to spell a proper noun, they're going to tell you, for example, I'll give you an example like Marcus's, which is my first part of my appellation. Christian appellation at that, capital M, little A-R-C-U-S. Then the middle part of my Christian appellation is Daniel, capital D, little A-N-I-E-L. Then the heirloom family that I come from is has a last part of Christian appellation as capital S, little T-A-N-A-L-A-N-D. I will assure you, if you start thinking about this, you try to hire an attorney, which we're all against. And if you go, you look on their business cards, they are not going to put all caps on their business card as who they are. Some of them is even going to put a misnomer. For example, for me to give you an understanding what a misnomer would be for me, would be capital M, little A-R-C-U-S, capital D, period, and not spell Daniel on out, which is a proper noun, and then spell Stanlin. even though I spell it with a capital S, little S, I mean capital S and little T-A-N-A-L-A-N-D. With that said, the truth of the matter is that we are not corporations. It's okay and it's proper to spell corporations out in all caps. But when you're talking, and one of our guys there, I believe it was Mr. Gerard, I'm not sure, but I believe it was, he really gave a pretty good three different phase analogy there as to the different things that he touched on, which was covering what's in a name. First and foremost, I will sure tell you this. If you go back 300 or 400 years to Britannica and you start looking up the definition of name, it is not complementary at all to we at the from a common law standpoint, or we from the standpoint of developing our grand jury and our sovereignty and so forth, sovereignty. I assure you, or inalienable rights as who we are. So the courts knows without question that if martial law is on our land, say in North Carolina right now, and I'm from North Carolina and South Carolina, and there is a foreign country here fighting wars, then that martial law is in effect at your attorney general's office. If not, and if it is, then's when they could literally, somebody in law, send out a paper to me in all caps, and that, they have to go all the way through, and it'd be Marcus Daniel Stanlin, all caps. Otherwise, we don't have that present, and so when anyone sends me an unlawful document, then that is definitely a scheme in law under color of law, and it's disguised as to who I am, and it's not me because I do not acquiesce to it. And it's in a form of an adhesion contract on just about everybody's driver's license. But with me, I make an exception. And I express to them at the driver's license that I have the right to travel and that I'm going to sign this document, upper and lower case letters, capital N, little A-R-C-U-S, capital D-A-N-I-E-L, lowercase, period, and a comma. That's unusual to you guys. And then Stanlin, uppercase S and the rest of it lowercase. The reason why there's a period and a comma or a colon there is because I come from England and I don't own the complete patent to the Stanlin family. I only have to recognize that I'm a portion. Okay, well, that said, I hope the how to spell a proper noun will help you guys understand that you're in violation to spell someone's proper noun in all caps. The only way you can do that would be for me, and there's no war on this land, I'd have to be deceased right now. So you could spell Marcus Daniel Stanlin in all caps, and that would be proper in law. Or the late Marcus Daniel Stanlin, all caps. Other than that, it is a slander of title, who I am. And by the way, I have wanted to comment on this for just a second. I've heard you guys mention a name. I have people ask me, what's my name? I won't respond. I say, now, excuse me. Are you talking about my Christian appellation? Because if you look at what's in a name, it's not complimentary to me. It's slander to me, the definition. So I don't recognize this thing of when someone asks me what my name is, but I let them know what my Christian appellation is. I hope this will help you if you start looking on two other situations, what is called a misnomer, that's M-I-S, space, nomer, N-O-M-E-R, go look that up in Black's Law Book. Sixth edition is pretty good. Go then look at Nome, N-O-M, space, day, ger. That is the criminal process of putting a name associated to you with some kind of paper carried out summons by some sheriff that is supposed to purport to you, but it's not you. It is your third illegal twin that they're trying, which you have a right to abate. And you tell them, look here, I'm a Christian. You just change these documents here to who I am, and by Christian, I have, no matter what it is, I have to come to that court and address these issues. Otherwise, you're sending a paper out to me, to my residence, that is a misnomer and also a nom de guerre, which is a scheme under color of law. And I said, please do not touch me with this paperwork you have here, Mr. Sheriff. But let me peek around and see, and I've lean around and see if this is me. If it is, I will accept it. I hope this will help you as to understand that you need to learn definitions of name, misnomer, nom de guerre, and color of law and schemes, and no doubt about it, the situations of where martial law comes into play. When it does, that's a different deal. We're not in martial law right now, so they have no right to bring out to you something that appears to be you, but is written out with misnomers or nom de guerres in all caps, and because that's under a scheme. And that's how they hoodoo people, and people acquiesce to this every day of the week, Monday through Friday normally, and sometimes even Saturday and Sunday. If that sheriff brings those unlawful documents, that's not you, according to what's on your birth certificate.
Gerard, are you muted again? Gerard.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, got you now.
I don't know why I got to keep plugging and unplugging this stupid USB mic. I guess it's getting shot, this headset. I got to get another one. It's not even that old. I seem to go through tons of them. It's got a little volume button on it, and if I pick it up and it's blinking the red light, that means you can't hear me. I don't know.
No.
And I unplug it and plug it back in, and it comes in, and the last time I had to do it three times before it started working again. But I'm assuming it's the mic. I don't know if maybe it's the USB port. I don't know. But anyway, it's a problem. What do we got? It's 11:54. That was Dan. I don't know that we... Who else do we have here? Terry. Let's go to Terry. Terry.
Hello.
Yes.
My name's Terry, and I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
Hi.
How you doing?
This is a very interesting conversation concerning the nom de guerres and the fiction names. I'm actually doing quite an involved study on this subject, and it's basically what I've learned is it's basically called fictitious conveyance of language. And this is what these attorneys actually go to school for. They learn a lot of contract, how to write contracts, and they actually write the mortgage contracts. And all these contracts that come through the courts, the indictments, and, you know, they just are really good at this fictitious conveyance of language. And I've actually learned that they actually have a patent on it. Which is quite interesting.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a patent, and it's a code. It's kind of like the code, so it's a code of language. So Daniel was talking about the nom de guerre, which is like the fiction. It's just really very simple. So, like, when we go to school as young children, and the children that are in school today, They're learning to spell. Okay, so spell, just think of that word. Think of all the meanings of that word, spell. So there's like a double meaning in that word, you know, spell a word, and then we have the word spell, like a trance. So the children learn how to write their name, and they're always learning cursive. So we have the cursive, so the root is curse. So you get curse, you get spell. So you just think of those two words, and you can see how they're really controlling us in the public schools everywhere, basically. So they're putting spells on us. They're putting these curses on us. So it's a double standard what's going on.
They're working against themselves because now they took cursive out of the schools. They're dumbing them down, teaching them to print. They don't even teach cursive in the schools here anymore. They threw it out. Yeah, and it's a shame because look at how much easier and nicer does it flow to write in cursive than block letters printing.
Right, right.
You know, even if you're fast, somebody in cursive is going to go across that page a lot quicker than you will printing block letters, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as all the stupid things that they do to try to entrap us, it only has power if you acknowledge it. And if you get, like John says, if you acknowledge the fiction, you give it power. And
right.
I think Lucifer is the same way. We make two mistakes in life today. One of them is not giving enough credit to the demon, and the other one is giving him too much credit. You have to have a healthy balance. You know, if you get too obsessed with something, then he's won. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuff, there's secret societies, there's Skull and Bones, there's Masonic, they got their symbols all over the place, you know? And and we have a president that knows them, and he's playing those things back on top of them now because he's speaking in codes through the Gematria, and they don't get it. They don't get what he's doing, but he's playing games back at them with signs and symbols and all this stuff. And I think that's great that he's having fun doing that. That's good because he's basically taking their game and shoving it back at them. So I find it all that very entertaining that he's speaking secret codes through it and through Q in himself. And, you know, because he's just taking them down and playing games with them, you know, but the whole thing is not a game. That's the thing. Our life
yeah,
and
people's
our,
lives are in balance. I mean, there's a lot
right,
of.
That's
I
right.
I mean, it's.
But when you look at when you're fighting a war, part of fighting a war is psyops, is psychological operations, and that's all this is. And today, think about it. Our war is, you know, it's not so much bullets as it is words, and computers. And powers and principalities, that's the war. This World War III that's going on around us right now, this battle for the nation, is basically a battle that's taking place in media and on paper. I mean, it will transfer eventually into the barrel of a gun because that's where all power comes from in this life, in this world, is from the end of a gun. And so at some point, the guns will come out, you know, if they have to. If somebody, they'll come out. If they want to take the nation away from us, but you know, 50 years ago, I think it was Khrushchev. He said, "We're going to take you over without firing a shot," and this is what he was talking about, I think.
Yeah.
So it's all interesting stuff, but I think we got to be careful about giving them too much credibility, and on the other hand, I think we got to be careful about not giving them enough credibility on some stuff they're doing.
Right, definitely, and the contracts are the paper is really the court. So the paper, what's on that paper, all that fictitious conveyance of language, it's all the negative words, the capitals. I mean, it's so I really have been going into the syntax grammar of these contracts, and even the presentments that come in the mail with our all caps name. You know, it could be a bill, it could be a debt collector. It's all in the fictitious conveyance of language, and it is very, very revealing. And I've only been just learning this in the last probably 3 months, and it's just amazing how we just look at a document, and it's like, oh no. You just get so emotional when you see all this stuff on a paper and they're talking about you and your, and you know, they've got all these words in there, and it's really basically all fictitious conveyance of language. It's called syntax, sentence structure, parse, syntax, grammar. I don't know if Brent has ever heard of that, but it's really about the grammar, the present tense, the past tense, and the future tense. And if we have all these tenses in one sentence, it basically is not even a sentence. So it's about the verbs, the nouns, and you know, most of these contracts that basically are void just because of the bad grammar. I mean,
when I was in school, they told us if you put a comma in a different place, it changes the whole meaning of the sentence. You know, if you put it in the wrong place, so that stuff's important.
Yeah.
Look, it's already midnight. I don't want to go too much longer, but going along the lines of what you just said too. That one woman said when she, I think it was Crystal maybe, said that the judge said, she said, where's my jury, my common lawyer? He says, I'm the jury. And in a sense, he's right, because when you're in an equity court, the parties have agreed to have the judge be the jury, basically.
Right.
But you see, that's only if the parties agree to having him do that. The minute you demand a jury and a trial, and it's over $20, I think he's done as far as being that thing, you know. I mean, when you come into an equity court, it's agreed that the judge is the arbiter, and he is the jury, and then you have a three panel of judges that you can appeal it to. But that's in equity. Of course, they want everything in equity today. So these are discussions that we'll be having in the future. I've talked to John about this, and we're gonna be hearing more of this, and Brent. So I'm gonna quit because I don't want the tape to go on too long. It gets to be over, you know, over 3 hours, and it kind of, you know, makes it hard for people. So it's been a good night, and I thank everybody for showing up, and hope that you'll be here next week. And don't forget, you know, we got a lot of stuff going to be going on. We're going to be making videos. We're going to be producing a plan to be sent to the president, because now is the time for us good men to come to the aid of our country. So everybody needs to notice that and do that and activate that. We need to be active. And part of that is, let's get some of this information out. Everybody on here is on other places. You should be spreading our paperwork and our name other places, getting John and myself interviews on these shows to, look at, all you got to do is get people to the site to read the stuff that we filed in the courts. The stuff we filed in the courts is going to mean something when we have enough people on it. Like John always talks about critical mass. If you get enough people pulling that stuff up and reading it and passing it around, that's how it gets powerful. You know, it needs to be viral. So we need to be pushing what we're doing here, because that's where our success is going to be. Everybody has a certain duty as a member to disseminate and to explain our stuff, to be a teacher, so to speak. You know, so get, first of all, take the courses, get the education, get the knowledge, and then go out and teach the knowledge. That's how we're going to do it. And it's happening, but it needs to happen a little faster, because I think we're moving too slow and the world is moving fast around us, and we're going to be left behind. We're going to have a big vacuum there that we're not going to be able to fill, and that's going to be a shame, because we're so close. We're so, so close right now. And once the trigger gets pulled, everything's going to happen fast, and you won't be able to catch up. So that's my warning. Come back next week. Join some of the calls during the week. And if you can help, we're going to be doing videos and news and different things to get our word out. And so if you think you can help with that, or even if you can put our stuff up on, you know, post our stuff on other sites, you know, and on your social medias, you should be posting it on. So I share everything now. I didn't want a Facebook account. I hated it. Didn't want it. But I ended up having to get one. You know, in L.A., we had to go in and get Facebook account. So once I was in there, I said, well, I'm in here. I might as well, when I come across a good video or we have something good or anything, I share it. I share it because I think that's still the best way to get the most eyes on it. So with that, I'm going to say good night and God bless. And thank you, Brent and Jan and everybody and Robert, and keep up the good work, and let's keep putting our heads together, because this is how this stuff gets developed, when we, you know, steel sharpens steel, and that's what we're doing here. That's the purpose of this, and you know, this is a big part of it, but we're going to need other nights and other things to be specific, like with our news channel and all that stuff. That's what we need help with, and those are going to be – we won't be able to do it with this call. This call will just seed it, and then we'll have to go and actually water it and grow it with committees. So with that, I'm going to say good night and God bless.
Good night.
Good night.